Amen.
All right, welcome to our last class before our break for the summer. And as I've mentioned to you already, I am tentatively planning in September to start a series of classes to really go deeply into the issue of the papacy, how, you know, the issue of the Pope, because that is such a burning question, such a urgent question, how to answer that correctly. And what we're actually going to do tonight is, in going through the pages of Tumultuous Times, we're going through a snapshot view of the principles regarding the papacy. So anyway, that is our focus for tonight. And so I didn't follow exactly the book, in developing this outline, but these are things that I have just an outline that's been in my mind for a long time. And so definitely we're going to refer to the book. I urge you to read those relevant pages. But just a little bit of a different approach, an outline approach. So let's go right into that. Let's look at the two principles that govern the papacy. Okay, our two cardinal principles, and this is based on crucial Catholic doctrine regarding the papacy. Nobody can dispute these two points. Number one, the Pope must be a Catholic. Can a Protestant be elected a Pope? Can a Buddhist be elected the Pope? One has to have the Catholic faith in order to be the Pope. It would be like, what if we had a presidential election and elected the Prime Minister of Italy as our president? Why would that not be what would be the huge problem with that? He's not a member of our country, so he cannot possibly be in a position of authority over the members of the country. He's disqualified by the very fact that he is not an American. You know, this is why a huge issue was raised, or many questions were asked and never really answered about the Obama's birth certificate. You know, people were saying, you know, if we don't have proof positive that he was born in Hawaii, how can we accept him as president? And 8 years went by and that question was never adequately addressed. And I remember at one point he had on the White House website posted a copy of his birth certificate, but it was in a PDF format. But you know what he didn't know, or whoever was putting it up there didn't know, is that it could also be analyzed. When you download that document, you can analyze it and see that it was tampered with. So to this day, I don't know if we even had a president. And I'm not referring to anything else other than the doubt about where he was born. But things went on. He was there for two terms, and we've moved on since then. But that is still an unanswered question. One has to be born, the Constitution is very clear, one has to be born, a natural born citizen in order to be elected. And of course there was another question raised about the fact that his father was never an American, but his mother was. But anyway, that's getting off the point. But the main point to emphasize here is that he has to be a Catholic. So formal heresy before election would prevent him from holding the papal office. Again, it'd be like a Buddhist being elected the Pope by the cardinals. He's not the Pope because he's already disqualified. So one has to have the Catholic faith. And as Catholic theologians teach, if if he loses the faith, if he falls into formal heresy, then if he was the Pope, he ceases to be the Pope. And we're going to go into this in a lot more detail in September in those series of classes. But St. Robert Bellarmine says, you know, because you have to be a member of the church in order to be the Pope, if you cease your membership, then by that fact, you cease the papacy. So this is not something we've invented or made up out of whole cloth, you know, just some wacky idea. No, St. Robert Bellarmine, and be good to know him, Sorry, it's a little bit faint here. I'll see if I can find a better pen. St. Robert Bellarmine. Aha. Okay. He is considered one of the premier theologians regarding the papacy. And he says he gives five opinions on this about the Pope if he were to fall into heresy. And he says the fifth opinion is the correct one, that if somebody falls into manifest heresy, he ceases to be the Pope, because by that very fact he ceased to be a Catholic. And a point that I would make with Bergoglio, calls himself Pope Francis, is he already had lost the faith before he put on the white cassock. So he was already disqualified from the get-go. Okay, people can argue that point if they want, but you can't dispute the principle that if you're not a Catholic, if you don't have the Catholic faith, you cannot be the head of the church because you're not even a member. So again, St. Robert Bellarmine gave us that, but there's all the theologians before Vatican II said the very same thing, or practically all of them. One of the ones that disagreed with him was Cajetan. Notice there's no saint before Cajetan, and the church doesn't say he's the number one theologian when it comes to the papacy. And St. Robert Bellarmine says Cajetan was wrong. So, in other words, we can safely follow what St. Robert Bellarmine teaches. Okay, and what is formal heresy? It's pertinacious denial of a teaching of divine and Catholic faith. So, you know, that the Catholic Church says this is a teaching of Christ, you must believe it, and you say, I'm not going to. That makes you a formal heretic, and you cease your membership in the church that way. There's a simpler way of looking at formal and material, and I think it's a great working definition. So formal and material. One knows better. And material, one doesn't know better. Okay, so if a little child learning the catechism thinks that there are 17 sacraments instituted by Christ, and holds to that, and then you say, my dear child, it's seven, not 17. Oh, okay. Do you see why that's not pertinacious? The child is in material heresy, so to speak, but it's not a sin. There's no bad effect. He's just learning. You know, what's interesting is St. Louis de Montfort says a true devotee of Mary can fall into material heresy, but never formal heresy, where you know what the Catholic Church taught before, you know, certainly before Vatican II, and you say, I don't accept that. That will never happen to a true devotee of Our Lady. So here's another example or way to illustrate formal and material. Let's say I think, hasn't this mistake happened to you where you thought that it was Thursday and you had a nice meat dish? And then you realize later, yeah, did you commit a sin? No, because you didn't know any better. You honestly thought, oh, today's Thursday, I'm going to have a steak. And then afterwards you realize, wow, that sure was delicious. And I wasn't supposed to do it. And that makes so the material was there for the sin, but it wasn't a sin because the the formal aspect wasn't there where you know it and you say, I don't care. Making sense so far? Okay. It's formal and material. And why do I say Bergoglio is a formal heretic? Because he knows very well what the Catholic Church taught as revealed by Christ before Vatican II, and he rejects it over and over and over again. Can we say of the one who is supposed to be the chief teacher of the church, oh, he doesn't know any better? Can you give him the benefit of the doubt? It's ridiculous. It's yes. Well, St. Robert Bellarmine said, when he's analyzing those five opinions, he says, in my opinion, I don't think it could ever happen. But then he says in the fifth opinion, but if it does happen, by that very fact that he's a manifest heretic, he ceases to be the Pope. Isn't that interesting? He didn't think it could ever happen, but he says, I can't go on what I just think or will or will not happen, but if it does, he ceases his membership. Yeah. Yeah, actions, it's more than a personal sin, because what's the saying? Actions speak louder than words. Yeah. If you see me praying in front of a Buddha statue, I'm in bad shape. Because what I may not be saying anything, but what am I manifesting to everybody? You know, I'm going through all the, you know, the ceremony. By the way, I'm never going to do this. Don't think for a minute. I'm just saying, this is 100% hypothetical. If you ever saw me do it, I am denying my faith by what I do. Okay? But he's gone way beyond that. I mean, long before he ever went to Rome and put on the white cassock, he was doing the same things that he's doing now. He's worshiping with other religions. He's fully implementing Vatican II. I saw one of his so-called kitty masses when he was the Cardinal Archbishop of Buenos Aires. It was a zoo. I mean, the kids are they're at a big party, and that's supposed to be the holy sacrifice of the Mass. So he thoroughly lost his Catholicity long before 2013. Okay, so why did I underline these two principles? Because I think sometimes we have to keep going back to them when we get into discussions and sometimes, yes, arguments with people. Keep bringing these two cardinal principles up. He has to be Catholic, and number two, he's infallible. Okay? That's the very reason why Christ gave us an infallible guide. I mean, that's the whole purpose of the papacy, right? So, what's interesting is, Protestantism says, the scriptures, interpret the scriptures for yourself. So basically what they're saying is every person's infallible. You'll figure out the truth just by reading the Bible. And we say, no, that can't be true. We only claim infallibility for one person, not for everybody. And that one is the Pope. Not every time he opens his mouth or has an opinion. Popes can do that. They have they have opinions. They can open their mouth and say something they think. But it's when they say, I decide this. This is what it means. This is, this is revealed by Christ. This is what we must follow. Whether he's doing it solemnly or in his day-to-day teaching, it's infallible. Okay, so let's keep coming back to these two principles over and over again, as often as necessary. The Pope must be a Catholic, and he is infallible in his official teaching and ruling. Okay, and one example of something that's never been solemnly taught by the church, is that murder is a mortal sin against the fifth commandment. Okay, the church has never solemnly taught it, but it wasn't necessary. It's just always been taught. Okay, so solemn or ordinary, extraordinary or ordinary, the church is a sure guide. That's what sets us apart from every other religion. We have that sureness of the church cannot lead us astray. The Pope cannot lead us astray when he's acting as a in his official capacity. Okay, letter B, requirements not necessary for a true Pope, although greatly needed and to be desired. Would we like to have a Pope with great prudence? Yes, how about a Pope with great knowledge and wisdom? Yes. We would also like him to be very holy. After all, how do you address a Pope? What is the official way of addressing the Pope? Your Holiness, Most Holy Father. So there should be indeed holiness, but our Lord never guaranteed prudence, wisdom, knowledge, and great holiness in the successors of St. Peter. But what he did guarantee is that they would never lead the church astray in their when they're acting in their official capacity. Okay, so a very important point to make, because you know Protestants will sometimes point to some of the bad popes and say, see, and then we have to say, wait a minute, we never claimed they were going to be saints. We never claimed they're impeccable. We only claim they're infallible. Big difference between those two words, impeccable means without sin, and infallible, cannot err. By the way, that's the correct way to pronounce it, I was told, err. I thought it was err. No, it's err. Okay, so very simple to address that issue if somebody says we claim impeccability. Never. So only two people, there's only one human person we claim impeccability for, Blessed Mother. Everybody else is peccable. I don't know if that's the right word. We're all, peccatum is the Latin word for sin, peccator is sinner. Yeah, we're all peccatores. All right. Okay, there are four ways that a pope stops being a pope. Let's go on to this now in letter C. There's two voluntary ways and there's two involuntary ways. So how does a pope lose his office voluntarily? If he resigns. He can do that. Right, Benedict XVI did it, but of course I never believed it was a true pope to begin with. But there were, what day is Pope St. Celestine I know it's in May. Is it May 19th? Okay. Pope St. Celestine, he was a monk or a hermit. Well, he had some monks living with him. They were all almost living like hermits. And he was renowned for his holiness. And one day, when the Pope died, the cardinals, for whatever reason, they elected him Pope. And so, you know, the official messenger struggles his way up to the mountain where he is with his monks, and he says, "You've just been elected Pope. Do you accept it?" Because if he doesn't accept it, he never becomes the Pope. He has to accept it. So because he was so holy, even though he said he realized he's only a hermit, he's not suited for this tremendous difficulty of administering the church, he saw that as the will of God. So he said, "I accept." So down he goes down the mountain, now as a true Pope, and he finds out that he can't do the job. He's known for his holiness, but you have to have more than holiness. You have to have tremendous, You should have to have, you should have great knowledge, great prudence, great organizational administrative skills. And he found out that he just couldn't do the job, and he was making a mess, not on purpose, but it was just like thrusting somebody into a position that he's not qualified for. And so I think it was after 5 months that he decided, I am going to resign. So he called the cardinals together and he said, I resign the papacy. And I think there were cardinals there who said, but you can't do that. And he says, well, the Pope can do anything as long as it's not, you know, against divine law. So that's right. Well, I resign it. I'm giving it up. And from that moment on, the church was without a pope till they elected the next one. So it points to the humility and sanctity of him. I mean, he thought he should at least give it a try. But then he realized he just was not suited for it. So anyway, any pope can voluntarily resign. Also, if he falls into formal heresy, that was his decision too. Okay, so that's the second voluntary way. The involuntary ways, falling into perpetual insanity, not just a temporary insanity, it could happen where, you know, just medical issue came up and temporarily is without the use of reason. Actually, we do this every day, don't we? When we go to sleep, do we realize we're not using our reason at that time? So it's kind of temporary insanity. It's a very pleasant one when you can fall asleep and get a good night's rest. Or people go into a coma, or sometimes there's an induced coma, like having an operation and the anesthesiologist puts you under. That doesn't make a pope cease to be pope if one of those things were to happen. But if it's continuous, you know, he falls into a crazy state of mind and never recovers, then he would lose the papacy. And then, obviously, whenever a pope dies, there's no pope. The chair of Peter is vacant. Okay. Now, the next point I would like to emphasize is that a juridical declaration is needed. The Catholic Church operates by laws, and one of the very clear laws in the church is somebody in authority has to make the decision about this. So let's look at how this juridically works, okay? How does it take legal effect when a pope ceases to be the pope? Okay, number one, resignation. By the very fact that the pope says, I resign my office, that is effective. His own declaration to the cardinals, I am giving up the papacy. Even if all the cardinals disagreed with him, it wouldn't change anything because the pope is supreme. So he doesn't need the cardinals to okay his decision. He doesn't need to say, would you all let me resign? Doesn't need to ask anybody that. He does it on his own. Okay, now falling into formal heresy. What if a pope falls into formal heresy? This has to be done by the cardinals, or in their default, by the bishops of the church. But remember, the cardinals, the bishops, they do not depose the pope. What they would say is, we declare that the pope has deposed himself by abandoning Catholic teaching, okay? I really want to emphasize that. Let's make a comparison here to the President of the United States. How does somebody stop being the president? Can somebody resign the presidency? Who has resigned the presidency? President Nixon resigned. He was staring at the Watergate issue. You know, and he didn't want to be impeached. Yeah, I'm not a criminal. So he decided to resign. He can do that. A president, he's impeached by the House of Representatives, and then if he's convicted by the Senate, then they throw him out of office that way. So the president is not supreme because he can be removed by Congress. But all the cardinals in the world and all the bishops in the world cannot remove a pope. They can only say that he removed himself. Does that make sense? Okay? They would say, for the benefit of all of us, the lower clergy, the religious, the lay people, the pope has unpoped himself. Okay, if I can put it that way. He did it himself. We are making this declaration as a juridical decree, so now we can proceed further, and everybody knows now that you have no obligations to this man as pope because he stopped being the pope. Yes. Yeah. Well, we would go by the cardinals saying, you know, he deposed himself. So God took away his authority, you know, as soon as he fell into formal heresies. So that's what the cardinals and bishops are supposed to be telling us. Okay? Well, that brings up the whole other issue. Almost all of the cardinals and bishops think he's the pope. They're not taking the action they should. So, and of course, I don't even think they're valid cardinals and bishops. So, we're in a real difficult situation. Okay, but we'll talk about that on page 2. Some of this will become more clear. I hope anyway. Okay, so the cardinals or bishops, they say he did it to himself. Okay, now the involuntary way, and we could say either God allowed the pope to fall into this perpetual insanity, or God could also say, okay, your time is up, pope so-and-so, you're going to die. Okay, God can do that. God can either allow it or make it happen or allow it to happen. Okay, so if a pope fell into perpetual craziness, you know, just became insane, and the cardinals would have to, you know, study the situation carefully. You'd probably get the advice of a number of medical experts. Can he ever recover from this insanity? And if they're all going to say, no, he cannot, he'll never regain his sanity, the cardinals would then say, okay, for the benefit of everybody, so there's no confusion, he stopped to be the pope. He's still a human being. Obviously you have to take care of this person, you know, like we would if anybody else that became perpetually crazy. But he's no longer the pope. He's not able at all to act as pope. I don't know that that's even ever happened in the history of the church, where somebody fell into perpetual insanity. Well, I know, but I'm talking about a medical condition. But doesn't it happen to people, I mean, where they can fall into a permanent insanity? You know, I'm talking about some kind of a medical condition. It can happen. So we would know that that happened. Okay. All right. And then finally, when the pope dies, there's a solemn ceremony involved where the Cardinal Camerlengo, and this is a cardinal who's designated ahead of time by the pope, he's the one that makes the official declaration the pope is dead. It's a very elaborate it's not that elaborate, but it is still a solemn ceremony that he enters the room where the pope has died. He's got a tiny silver hammer. It's very light, it's small, and he taps the pope 3 times on the forehead, and he calls him by his baptismal name. In the case of Pope Pius XII, when he died on October 9th, 1958, Cardinal Tisserand was the Cardinal Camerlengo. He enters the room, taps him on the Eugenio. And this is just symbolic because, you know, it's obvious the Pope has died. But it's only then that the Cardinal then says the Pope has died. And he signs the certificate. That's like a doctor in a hospital signing the death certificate of somebody. You know, it's already obvious to everybody that so-and-so has passed away, but, you know, you still need, no decisions can be made until that death certificate is signed, okay? Or in the case of, when there's a questionable set of circumstances as to somebody died, who has to investigate? Isn't it the coroner? And of course, it's obvious the person has died, but they have to give the cause of the death. So there are legal procedures for saying somebody has died. You have to go through the legal procedure. Okay, so what do we do when a juridical declaration is lacking? This is the situation we're in today. And what I'd like to do is just back up. Let's say you and the Pope are on a desert island, okay? And the Pope tells you, okay, I'm resigning the papacy. What are you going to do after that? It's just you and the Pope on this desert island. What would you say? Would you continue to treat him as the Pope? No, you wouldn't, because he said, I've decided to give up the papacy, and he can give his reasons or not. But still, for the rest of the world, until the two of you are rescued from this desert island, as far as the rest of the world is concerned, he's still the Pope. Somebody has to juridically say, or, you know, the cardinals would have to hear him say, I'm giving up the papacy. Then it becomes official. Does that make sense? So if it's just you and he on the desert island, as far as you're concerned, you don't treat him as the Pope anymore. But that doesn't, you know, we need the cardinals to hear him say, I'm resigning, and from that moment it's official, okay? Yes? Yes. Well, in that, again, juridically, it doesn't take effect until the ones in authority, the cardinals are the highest, you know, the council in the church. They have to hear the Pope say that, I'm resigning. So if they don't hear it, it doesn't happen juridically. Okay, so the church goes by laws and procedures, okay? Let's say you were kneeling next to the Pope, you're at his deathbed, and you can see that he's died. And the Cardinal Camerlengo hasn't come in yet. What are you going to say? Is the Pope dead? Right, because you just saw him, you saw that he took his last breath. Personally, you're saying, okay, he died. But legally, it's not established until the Camerlengo comes in and does the official signing of the death certificate. And he does use his little ceremonial silver hammer to tap the Pope on the forehead. Yes, okay? So, and this will make a little more sense as we get into this. Okay, now let's start off with point number one. A conclave to elect a new pope cannot take place without the juridical declaration. I've heard it said a number of times over the years, why don't the traditional bishops get together and elect a true pope? You say he's not the pope, he's not the pope, he's not the pope. What's the main reason why they can't get together and have this election? No, we're not lacking a silver hammer. Okay, look back in the outline. Who has to decide that the Pope fell into formal heresy? The cardinals have to, or if there were no cardinals, the bishops in charge of dioceses where the Pope had put them in charge of a diocese. Our traditional Catholic bishops do not have the juridical authority to say the chair of Peter is vacant. That's why we can't have a papal election. Because the legal declaration is that important. Somebody with the authority. For example, somebody dies right now. Let's say one of my parishioners dies in the hospital. I've been attending to this person. Why can't I sign the death certificate? I don't have the authority. That's why. As far as I can tell, and I act accordingly, this person is deceased. Yeah, I have spiritual authority to give the sacraments, but I don't have the legal authority to say this person is now deceased. I know, but it's not a matter. It's not a faith and the legal authority to do something are two different things. Yeah. Well, again, I'm using an analogy here, and analogies aren't the greatest explanation, you know. But the point that has to be made is we don't have good Catholic cardinals to say he has fallen into heresy. We are all signing this document saying that he has unpoped himself. Well, they would never say unpoped. That's not a real word. He has deposed himself. You have no authority. You have no more obligations to him. We are proceeding to a new election. We don't have those. We would need cardinals and or bishops who were in charge of dioceses when they appointed by a true pope. They are the ones that have the authority to do that. And that's the difficulty we're in today. Yes. So what was that letter that was provided for the bishops and cardinals? Wasn't that the dubia? Okay, that was nothing like this at all. Those four cardinals, two of whom are dead, they said, please clarify for us. And so they were asking for a clarification. What they really should have done is said, we declare that you are formally going against the teaching of Christ and of the Catholic Church. You are no longer Pope. That's what they should have done. But they're, you know, it's unfortunately a terrible waste of time and energy to say, please clarify something that's really blatantly obvious. Okay, so that was not that issue at all. Yes. Mm-hmm. That's a good question. First of all, I could never imagine the modernist cardinals of Vatican II saying, "Oh, you're right. This is all wrong. We shouldn't be doing this. He's not the Pope." I can't imagine it happening. If they did, I think we'd say, "Yay, way to go! Let's move on to the election of a true Pope." You know. The only question that would remain is who is the valid electors. But remember, the church went through this problem not as badly, but before the during the Great Western Schism, when you had three popes, and who knows if any of these cardinals were any good, if any of them were legally appointed. But all the Catholic bishops got together And they said, we're electing a pope. And everybody consented to that afterwards. And that's the way Pope Martin V came into office. Yes. Right. Yes. Yes, that's the very good point. That they can't do anything anyway because they've been heretics for so long. But if you had a few of them saying, okay, the chair of Peter is vacant, he has ceased to be the pope, that would be an amazing thing, starting to move things in the direction of getting a true pope. Yeah, I know, they're modernists, but still, as I said, the analog to that is that during the Great Western Schism, all these the three popes, and remember, there were pope after pope after pope in Rome, pope after pope in Avignon, pope after pope in Pisa, and they're appointing cardinals. It could be that none of them were valid cardinals. Yeah, exactly. That's the main difference. They were not heretics, but if they were to say Bergoglio's a heretic, that would mean they're getting the Catholic faith back. You know, and it would be like, in that case, the traditional Catholic bishops could then, I think, provide the leadership to say, all right, let's get together. I mean, it would be one of the greatest miracles of all time, as you can imagine. Okay, yes. Right. Right. So to rephrase that for the sake of the recording, they did the best they could in the circumstance, and since that time, nobody has said that they all did the wrong thing. Everybody says they did the right thing. You do what you can. You know what's interesting is our Lord did not decide how the church is to get a pope. Isn't that interesting? Our Lord did not establish that. Well, the first one was appointed. There may have been one more pope that was appointed by his predecessor, but I'm not sure about that. But election is pretty much the way they've always done it. When the bishops got together during the Great Western Schism, they weren't going against divine law. They're just saying, we're doing the best we can. By the way, here's another scenario. Would you like to hear another scenario? This is in normal times, okay? Everybody, we're back in normal times. Everybody, it's 1940 right now. And Pope Pius XII just died 18 years earlier than he actually did. So the cardinals are all in the Sistine Chapel. How old is the Sistine Chapel? The 300 or 400 years old. A tragedy happens. The roof collapses and kills all the cardinals that are doing the voting. Is that the end of the church? It killed all the cardinals. What would you do then? The bishops of the dioceses would get together and say, let's elect a new pope. And then he would appoint new cardinals and we'd be back on track. I think some theologians have actually speculated on this. What if this roof collapsed? You know, the beautiful Michelangelo... You know, the roof of this, the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel, it's forever lost to history, collapsed, killed all the cardinals. The church wouldn't come to an end even then. Isn't that great to know? Okay. So, a few more of these very important points. The church operates, so number one, the church operates on laws just like the state, and personal judgments cannot substitute for decisions that bind all the members of a society. Point number two, we are not prevented from acting reasonably. Indeed, we have the duty on a personal and moral basis to separate ourselves from one we know not to be a true pope. This is our situation. We have come to this decision, not juridically, but it's become painfully obvious that if I follow Bergoglio, I am going against what the what Jesus Christ and the Catholic Church have taught us to do. So what do I? So if I can, here's an analogy that let's say you're in the military and somebody comes up to you dressed like a, you know, 3-star general and starts telling you to do things, and then you realize that that person is a fraud. Would you keep on obeying that general? Would anybody expect you to obey that general that you know to be a fraud? He just put on the uniform. As a matter of fact, everybody would expect you to disobey him. That person has no authority over you. So this is the situation we're in today. We've come to this painful realization that true popes cannot be teaching us heresy. They have to have the Catholic faith, and this is why we have to make this decision. So it's a personal but not a juridical decision. But let's add a couple of more points to that. Let's look at this objection that's so often made. You don't have the authority to judge the Pope. And the answer is true. We do not have the juridical authority to declare that somebody's not the Pope. But as I put here, we're not deaf, we're not blind, and we're not dumb. And if I were to follow Bergoglio, I know I'm going against what Jesus and the Catholic Church have taught us to do. I mean, from the 1,960 years before Vatican II came along. So that it's not a juridical decision. And I need to save my soul, but if I, it makes no sense. Let's go back to this apparently he's a 3-star general, or maybe let's say he's a 4-star general, highest rank in the military. Well, maybe they could have a 5-star, but anyway, it doesn't matter how good his uniform looks. It doesn't matter how many medals. If he's not a real general, you don't obey him. You don't follow him. You have nothing to do with him. That's the issue today. That's why we are traditional Catholics. As a matter of fact, every traditional Catholic in the world has realized at some point that I can't follow him. He's telling me to do sinful or heretical things. So it's only what common sense and indeed Catholic teaching, what theologians would tell us to do. And here's another issue. We have to act appropriately. I was listening to, again, a talk on this issue by Bishop Sanborn, and he said, let's say your neighbor tragically turns out to be a child molester. Are you going to let your children go over and play in his yard? Nobody would do something like that, even though he's not legally found guilty yet. Again, we do make judgments. We do make judgments all the time. Right now I'm making a judgment. You're sitting in this room listening to me. You're making a judgment that I'm up here standing and talking to you. That's a judgment. We're not talking about reading minds, but if somebody's going around committing crimes, we don't just say, well, you're not legally guilty, so I'm just going to treat you just like I always did. Wouldn't make any sense. So even though the legal part is not available to us, this is the great trial of our times when we don't have the legalities in place to protect the sheep. The sheep have to do more self-protection because of the situation. Fortunately, we have traditional Catholic bishops who are great leaders, but they will all say, I can't make that juridical declaration because I was never assigned a diocese by a true pope. So we make the common sense, obvious decision, but at the same time we realize the juridical or legal aspect is not there. Another great point, and this has been made by NovusOrdoWatch.org, is you don't need authority to make a necessary conclusion. Okay, I'm going to, okay, I've got one chair here. Okay, as a matter of fact, I'm going to make two groups here. Okay, got two chairs there, two chairs here. 2 + 2 = 4. I've got four chairs here. Did I need authority to say that? No, no, I don't think anybody in the world would say, you didn't have the authority to make that declaration. I mean, we do this all day long. You know, go bring me those four chairs over there, or buy me three books, or, you know, we do these things all the time. So when we say that a formal heretic cannot be the Pope, we don't need authority to say that. That's just the teaching of the church. If we say that somebody's leading the church astray in his official capacity, you don't need authority to utter the truth. So these are just some ideas you can keep in mind when people say, by what authority do you act? And I hope I've given you enough analogies where we have, in fact, acted like that. It's not a pride thing. It's not a holier-than-thou thing. It's just saying, I know what the truth is, and I have to act accordingly. You know, I hold to what the Catholic Church has taught before things started to change with Vatican II. So, again, it's not a question of authority. Like, you know, 2 + 2 chairs + 2 chairs = 4. It's not a matter of authority. It's a matter of duty. I mean, if I was going to sell you four chairs and then I only give you three, you know, I'm cheating you. Okay, I have the duty to speak the truth. There's four chairs here. I'm going to sell you four chairs. You pay me for four chairs. You know, that's just the obvious truth that's there. So just different points to keep in mind. We are on very solid ground, even though we recognize the difficulty of our times. You know, I did put this here, but here's another question people will say. How are we ever going to get a true pope again? And the answer to that is, I don't know. But what I do know is I need to keep the Catholic faith. I do know I'm supposed to try to become a saint. I know that. And I do that. We're all supposed to do that every day of our lives. Do what we know we're supposed to do. Keep the faith. Become saints. And our Lord will take care of these other things that are beyond our ability. You know, if I don't have the authority to declare, you know, this is ridiculous, but it gets across the point. What if I showed up at Spokane Courthouse tomorrow and put a robe on and walked into one of the courtrooms? Yeah, well, I mean a judge's robe. Could I issue any legal declarations? Even if I knew that person was really guilty? Again, I don't have the authority, so I shouldn't worry about the fact that I don't have the authority. Let the ones who have the authority take care of it. If there's nobody there, I'll act on my own what I need to do, but I can't, you know, I can't worry about the things that I can't take care of. So also, one last objection very quickly, because we are almost out of time. How long can the church last without a pope? Because it does seem, I have this quote here from Vatican Council I, if anyone says that it is not by the institution of Christ, the Lord himself, that is to say by divine law, that blessed Peter should have perpetual successors in the primacy over the whole church, or that the Roman pontiff is not the successor of blessed Peter in this primacy, let him be anathema. But the point to remember is that nowhere in church teaching does it say that after so many weeks or months or years, there absolutely has to be a pope, otherwise we're not following this teaching. So what we need to take, the take-home lesson here is, the papacy, and hopefully this can make very clear and obvious sense. Okay, let me say it. The papacy will last until the end of time. Okay? Is that clear? Should be, hopefully it's clear and obvious to everyone. The papacy will last until the office will always be there. But what is not true is that there will always be a live pope in the chair of Peter, because every time a pope dies, what do we call that condition in the church? Sede vacante. And that's Latin for the chair being vacant, the chair being empty. Okay. Yes, Mary. Yeah. Yeah. Well, my answer, and I'll have to be real quick with that, is our Lord didn't say that there will always be a live pope. He said he would stay with his church. I will be with you, the church, all days. But where does it, how can, what they're taking out of that is a meaning that's not there, that there will always be a live pope. Well, he's with his church. Well, let me put it this way, and this is the question you could ask people. So are you saying that the church dies when a pope dies? See, that's the question. I know, but and they'll say that, but say, where does it say how, you know, what's the maximum amount of time that can go by? Just ask them that. Point to me church teaching that says if we don't have a true pope by 3 months after a pope dies, there automatically must be a pope. Just ask him where the church teaches that. It doesn't exist. Okay, so as a matter of fact, there's a Father Riley, a recognized Irish theologian, who said it could happen that there's no pope for 60 or 70 years. So he's right. So we'll have to stop here. So Thank you very much, and we'll take a break for the summer and study this issue more in depth come September. All right, God bless you.